Raising the Bets is brought to you by the StarQuest Production Network and is made possible by our many generous patrons. If you'd like to support the podcast, please visit sqpn.com/give. You're listening to Raising the Bets, a family podcast of pirates and penguins. We're a Catholic couple raising five kids outside of Boston. Join us as we share the joys and challenges of marriage, homeschool, and our adventures near and far.
Or no adventures, actually, right now. Sorry.
As we make sense of the world and experience the best parts of our culture. I'm Dom Bettinelli.
And I'm Melanie Bettinelli.
It's the greatest adventure of all. It's the inner adventure.
Uh-huh.
The adventure at home.
Yeah, well, I don't know about anyone else, but this is just sort of normal life, except without going out of the house.
Right. I work from home. You homeschool all the kids.
I work from home.
Yeah.
The kids work from home. We all work from home.
Right. This is the people said it lockdown. Well, this is Tuesday. This is just normal life for us mostly.
I mean, normally, yes, I would have actually been scheduling trips to like the museums and stuff. That was on my that was on my slate for this time of year.
I know.
So yeah, I'm kind of sad because normally we would have had a trip to the Museum of Fine Arts, and I was really looking forward to seeing the painting Ito exhibit at the Harvard Museum. And we had a few other outings planned.
We wanted to do the Freedom Trail again this spring, right. The other half of it that we didn't get to do the last time we did it, 4 years ago? We had quite a bit of stuff we wanted to do this right. spring.
But in terms of the day in, day out, like getting up on Monday morning, it's pretty much business as usual.
Yes. Get up in the morning, get to work, and...
Except that I got to sleep in this morning.
Right. Sunday morning, we did not have to get up quite as early. We had Mass with Catholic TV's Mass from the National Shrine of the Basilica of the Immaculate Conception in Washington.
Which was really beautiful.
It was really beautiful. Really quick. They edited that down. Did you notice that? I mean, there were the transition from the prayers to the readings to the, like, it was they cut out all the middle part.
Was that what happened?
Yes.
I didn't catch that.
Yeah, they had to have edited that down pretty good. And his homily wasn't that long. So we were in and out in a half hour. Yeah. That is not what happens with Father Michael or any of the other priests from every parish.
But I didn't feel like they were shortchanged on like music or anything.
No, the music was beautiful. The music,
they had a choir from the seminary.
Yeah, the John Paul II Seminary.
Which was really, really nice.
The selection of music was awesome.
It was.
Yeah. It was good. You know, we're...
One question that a lot of my friends have been asking online is, what do you do when you watch the Mass?
How are you supposed to behave?
Right. Like, yeah, how do you behave? Like, do you wear your pajamas or do you get dressed? Do you put on your shoes or do you go barefoot? Do you sit, stand, and kneel, or do you just kind of sit there and watch?
Yeah, I've seen some people with pictures of them, watching the live streamed or TV Masses, and some people are, sitting in their easy chair with their feet up.
Mm-hmm.
But what we do is, I think putting your shoes on, I think that may be excessive. And frankly,
but for some people, don't feel dressed unless they're wearing shoes.
On the other hand, there are lots of people who think that shoes in the house is gross.
Right.
It's not sanitary.
We're not of the shoes in the house is gross, but we're generally all barefoot in the house. Yeah,
once
90% of the time.
Once it gets like over 75 outside. Unless I have to go somewhere, I don't wear shoes. Like, unless I'm like going to the store or to church or something like that, I'm a hobbit.
Yeah.
as long as I can be. And most of our kids are that way too. So, but I don't feel it's like dressing down because different cultures, different way, have different ways of doing things. Like if you go to Mass out in Hawaii, all bets are off. Like the flip flops and shorts and Hawaiian shirts and people think that's dressed up. That's not like, you should dress up more. That is dressed up. So.
Right. In the case, we did tell the kids no pajamas.
So we did get up. We got dressed. I didn't put on church clothes.
Right.
I had my t-shirt on and my regular, khakis. But we were all dressed. We'd all eaten, right, I think?
Yeah, I had a cup of tea.
Yeah, the kids had all had some bread. Usually the kids don't eat before we go to Mass. That's just, because it's such an early mass too. But they know we fast before mass, and so but we've relaxed that for them because we're not actually going and receiving communion. So, and it's later than it normally is. It's we watched it at 10?
We had 10, yeah.
Yeah. So you say that as if it's shameful. Lots of people go to mass at 10.
I didn't say it was shameful.
Okay. Just,
it was 10. It was not 8.
Yeah. So, and we sit, stand, kneel and do all the responses and cross ourselves and all this. We do all the stuff as if we were at mass. I think that is a nice balancing point.
Right. I saw one suggestion that people actually sort of place a table in front of the screen in which they were watching and, you know, maybe put a candle there and a Bible. And that seems like a really nice gesture.
Logistically,
in our house, that would be
the TV is tough. Sits over my recording equipment.
Right.
I am not putting any lit candles next to the recording equipment.
No. But I can see it as a nice gesture that would be could be good to do.
If I really thought it was really important, I would rearrange things and I would set it up so we could do that. But yeah, I mean it's also a small room. There's 7 of us in the office, and it's not a big room. So
right,
yeah, it's kind of tricky. But we watch it on the big screen. We don't gather on the iPad, but you could do that if that's what you had. You know,
right.
But I stream it via Apple TV to the big screen, so that works out.
Actually, you had it on 3 screens.
Well,
today.
So I had it on my computer, on my iMac, which has 2 screens. I have a second screen on the iMac. And when you're mirroring the computer screen, because for whatever reason, the Catholic TV, Apple TV app doesn't have the mass from the Basilica on it. I don't know why.
Is it weird?
I should send a message to Bishop Reed and ask him, you know, why that is. But and maybe they can fix it. But we wanted that particular mass for whatever reason today, because we just thought it would be a nice, a beautiful mass, which it was. So so I had to play it on my computer, and when it streams, it mirrors it to all the screens that are attached to the computer, which including the TV and the other monitor. So 2 27-inch screens and the 35-inch, I don't know how big our TV is. It's not a giant TV. 35-inch TV next to it. Added on, it was like Super Jumbotron.
Lucy really liked the effect of the. She's like, I can see it on 3 screens at once.
It surrounds mass. The cyclotron. What is the remember that the oh back in the day the it was never mind it was the screens that went around you
like an omni theater.
Oh yeah, in Disney World they call it the Circle Vision 360. It goes all the way around.
Okay,
you.
I don't know.
Anyway, or like omni theater. So yeah. Some people feel awkward, like, should we only live stream mass? Is it okay to watch recorded mass? Do we do responses if it's a recorded mass because we know they're not actually doing it now? Hey, look, don't overthink it.
The way I figure is this. The mass is outside of time anyway. It connects us to heaven and to Jesus' sacrifice on Calvary. I always say this
cavalry.
Word.
Right? Calvary. Calvary. Now you got me doing it. Calvary.
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 Right. It's one of those words. I know what the right word is. It's like, just my tongue
like
won't
aluminium
say it.
And right. Paschetti. Go ahead.
Well, like brazier and brazier. I can never
don't
say the right word.
Up.
No. I do every time.
Yes. Awkward.
Okay. Anyway, the mass is outside of time anyway. So, and there are masses going on at any given time somewhere in the world right now. Mass is being said. Right.
So your sacrifice, your prayers, your responses are all united to the mass somewhere.
Right. Really.
Somewhere in the world.
Really.
Right now.
There's one mass. We're all participating in the one sacrifice of Christ. I mean, this was the thing that we kept telling the Protestants during the Reformation. Right.
Right.
They kept saying, why are you re-sacrificing Christ? And we're like, no, there's one sacrifice. Every mass is a participation in that one sacrifice.
Right.
So does it really matter? Like,
we're only serving one meal. No one gets their own meal. It's family style.
Okay. If you say so.
Sorry, my brain went in a weird direction there. So
I didn't quite follow that, but okay.
I know. In my head, it made sense. So Jimmy Akin actually had a really good response to that, too. He said, if you think about it, everything that we experience is delayed anyway. So, like, because there's the speed of light. So if I'm in the back of the church, I'm not watching the mass as it happens. It's some microsecond later that I'm actually experiencing it.
Uh-huh. Realistically speaking, though.
Well, for people like you and me, that it's like, sure, whatever. But for like engineering sciencey types who are really strict on that sort of thing, I think that might help.
Okay.
Yeah. Anyway.
Sure.
It's a thing. So that was Mass today. So, let's talk about some of the stuff we've been doing this past week. We haven't been going out, but we've been doing some things. So you're participating in a, what is it called? What is it like?
A drawing challenge, I suppose you could say.
Like people have been doing these for a while where
right.
every day there's a new prompt.
Yeah. So the first I saw was Inktober.
Right.
Although I don't know if that's the first ever, but it was the first one that came to my attention, where some guy, I don't know who, I'm sorry, came up with a list of drawing prompts. And so every day,
of them, right?
Right. One for every day of October. And so each day, and then it was like a social media thing, like, you know, hashtag Inktober, and people
could
make
a drawing, you'd post it with the hashtag.
And people could share their drawings and see what other people were doing. And it would kind of create a nice communal thing. Like,
right.
What did you do? And it was fun to see different people's like very different takes on some of these prompts.
In random words, like wish, you know, right. seaside. Or, you know, and then people could be creative with it. And they would come up with, you know, unusual interpretations of the word.
Right. So anyway, my friend Simka Fisher, she's kind of famous, like writes and blogs and stuff.
Catholic blogger.
She also has a podcast with her husband, Damien.
Right.
Though it's not an SQPN podcast.
No.
Anyway, she came up with this idea doing a, you know, quarantine lockdown, whatever you want to call it, coronavirus.
Art project.
Art challenge.
Communal art challenge. Right.
So she came up with a very punny name, Withdraw.
Get it?
Withdraw.
Yeah.
Withdraw 2020.
And she came up with a list of words that were could be related to the current event, the current right. situation, but could also have a more generic right. meaning as well.
Right. So things like patient,
curve,
home,
yeah,
distance.
Right.
I'm trying to remember some of the others. Today's was beans.
Beans.
I guess stocking up on beans
because people are eating a lot of beans.
Right. Anyway, it's been fun. So I was originally going to do a drawing a day. And then a friend suggested maybe using them as poetry prompts, writing prompts, as opposed to drawing prompts. And that actually really just hit a nerve. And I thought, I'm kind of more interested in that. Like, I like drawing. I would have had fun drawing it, doing the prompts as drawing prompts. But I ended up letting the kids do drawings, which some of them have been participating in.
Yeah.
I think each kid has done at least one, except I think maybe Sophie has opted not to participate.
Surprise.
But Ben and Anthony and Lucy have all done a couple drawings, and Bella has done one. She did one of a dolphin for Curve.
No, she did Mask.
Oh, yeah, she did Mask, too.
She's done a couple.
She's done a few.
Yeah.
Anyway. And I've written a few poems. I got stuck after a couple of days and didn't do the last few prompts. I just could not think of a poem for patient or curve.
Uh-huh.
Maybe at some point. Don't even go there.
Sorry.
But I've been posting my poems on my blog and on Facebook. So if you're interested, you can come see what I've done for Mask and Distance and Home.
Well, Don't sell yourself short on this. You have inspired other artists as well. In the comments on your post at thewinedarksea.com, your post on the distance poem, a commenter said your poem inspired her to set it to music.
Yes, that is the first time I believe that anything I've written has been set to music.
And she posted a link to her SoundCloud where she has it. I will endeavor to remember to put an excerpt of that right here, a short excerpt of that song.
How many miles to Babylon? 70. Can I get there by candlelight? Yes, and back again. How long is a mile? How tall is a tree? If I climb to the top, how far can I see? Can I see to China? I see o'er the treetops all the way home.
In any case, thank you very much, Jill. I'm very flattered.
Yes, it was. That was very surprising and very cool.
Yeah, super cool.
That was really awesome. And if people want to check out Withdraw, you can jump right in. I don't think there's any rules. There's no rules about
right.
it.
Right. Do one, do many, do them in any order, really. I'll try to find the
link to Simca's original page with the prompts on it.
Yeah.
So you could jump in wherever you want. So what else have we been doing? So last Tuesday was St. Patrick's Day.
Indeed.
The saddest St. Patrick's Day in New England.
Oh, my goodness. Yeah, that was.
People were very, very disappointed.
All the pubs were closed. There was no parade.
No bars were open. No parade. And Tom Brady left New England. So what was one of the late night hosts says, hey, could someone check on Boston if they're all right?
It was a sad day in Boston.
A very sad day. But what we did. So every St. Patrick's Day, Cardinal Sean Patrick O'Malley does a mass at the Cathedral of the Holy Cross in Boston for St. Patrick's Day every year.
Because St. Patrick is the patron saint of the Boston Archdiocese. Of the Archdiocese.
Yes. And so this year, of course, they couldn't have the usual congregation. So Catholic TV live streamed it. It was the Cardinal. There was a priest. Was he a Holy Cross priest? I think he was a Holy Cross.
I thought he was the rector of the cathedral.
No, that's Father Leary. The priest, right. The homilist was not the rector. That is not Father Leary.
Oh, I don't know.
The homilist was a religious order priest. I think he's a Holy Cross priest. I forget now. Who's Irish? Who was from Ireland?
Right.
And so he gave a really great homily.
It was a really good homily on St. Patrick.
If you get a chance to go to Catholic TV and check it out, that's really good. The Cardinal gave his remarks at the beginning of Mass about, you know, where we, you know, the way things are and how the Cathedral Festival Choir, which was like six people, I think, seven people plus some instrumentalists.
Probably some percentage of the choir.
Yes, it was a below the 25 level total people in the cathedral. Was the thing. And so they had the usual mass. And so was it all of us?
No. It was Bella, Lucy, and Ben was in and out.
Right. Because it wasn't Sunday mass, so we didn't make them.
It was optional.
But we experienced that. It was really nice. It was a very nice way to spend a St. Patrick's Day mass. And frankly, it's something we probably wouldn't have done on a regular St. Patrick's Day.
That's true. We probably would not have thought to stream the Mass.
Or even to go to Mass. It's just not something we would have done. But it just seems like nowadays there's more incentive to do this sort of thing.
And it was also Lucia's baptism day.
Yes, it is.
Which was a little bit deliberate on my part when I was looking at potential baptism days and I saw that March 17th. 2013 was an option. I said
because it was a Sunday.
Saturday.
Was it a Saturday?
That was a Saturday.
Oh, it was a Saturday because we had the baptism outside of Mass. That's right.
Yeah. Anyway, when I saw that it was an option, I thought that would be really cool for her baptism day to, which will frequently fall during Lent, to always be on a feast day.
Yes. If she lives in the Archdiocese of Boston, it will always be a solemnity.
Right.
So she can have a cake or something. Yeah, I remember that actually. Now that was the baptism, that was the crazy baptism.
It was a little crazy.
It was because it was like other families there, and it was a bit chaotic. Let's just say it was chaotic, because it was like 40 of us from my family,
right?
And then
I think there were like four or five other kids.
And
being
then four
baptized.
Or five other kids, where there was like 10 people of each of those. So we were like, it was a bit chaotic. So we had Lucy's baptism day, and then we did the renewal of our baptismal vows, which I'm sure we've talked about because we must have had other baptisms since we started the podcast. So that's always nice.
Yeah, I didn't make a special dessert, but I did have some lemon muffins that I repurposed as cupcakes with some chocolate frosting.
Yes.
And that seemed to satisfy everyone's desire for a special treat. And we had our usual corned beef and cabbage dinner.
Yes, we did. We had
which was not boiled dinner, though.
Right, because nobody here likes boiled dinner.
No, so I roasted the
roast your corned beef.
Corned beef. It's really good. It gets
so
nice,
much better.
A nice crunchy crust on the outside.
Yes,
and then I actually
You gotta rinse it though. Make sure you rinse it.
Oh yes,
really,
otherwise it's way too salty.
Yes.
Oh my gosh.
Because boiling it pulls a lot of the salt out.
Right.
So that's why they boiled it. But if you're not gonna boil it, you gotta rinse it really good.
I did. This year I rinsed it and it was not too salty.
Last year we didn't rinse it.
It was bad. it was really kind of painful.
It was way too. You couldn't eat it. So we had the corned beef.
I sautéed the cabbage with onions.
Yep.
And then I served it with a balsamic reduction, which was really yummy.
Yes. Yes. That's really good. And then we had roast potatoes.
We had potatoes two ways. Mashed.
Oh, that's right.
And roast.
Mashed and roast.
Because some of our children love mashed potatoes. Some of our children will not eat mashed potatoes, but like roasted potatoes. I did them both ways.
That the children who won't eat the mashed potatoes don't eat it because of the way we like it, which is a little chunkier with the skins.
I don't think it has any. I think they would refuse.
With more
regardless.
Butter and cream.
Yeah. I think that no matter what I did, they would not eat mashed potatoes.
That's probably. Yeah. So that was good. And then, by the way, when you make your corned beef, always make sure that there's some left over so you can have the next day for breakfast, or some later day that week, which I did, you could have corned beef hash. So I had some of the leftover roast potatoes. I had the rest of leftover corned beef. You cook them up with some onion and garlic, and it's really good. And then you put the eggs on top. You like the over easy eggs? Yes, that's really good. So that was Tuesday, St. Patrick's Day. Yes.
Tuesday.
So on Thursday, which is great. I love that in the middle of Lent, you have these two big feast days. We had St. Joseph's Day.
Right.
Which is
also Benedict's patron feast.
One of his
day.
Patrons, because his middle name is Joseph. And we always celebrate that for as an Italian family. You made Zeppoli. St. Joseph Zeppoli, which we call
cream puffs.
We call it Zeppoli, but it's really cream puffs. So patachou pastry,
mm-hmm.
And then you made the pastry cream for the inside. Came out really good this year.
They did.
Last year was a little soupy.
Last year I did something wrong with the pastry cream and it did not thicken properly. I don't know what happened.
But this year you nailed it.
I did. I think I was scared last year and I took it off the heat too soon. This year I was like actually scared that I had left it on too long. It was really thick.
Mm-hmm.
But it was perfect.
Yes, it was perfect. The other thing is don't be afraid of patachou. You know, the cream puff, the puff pastry.
Puff pastry.
Yeah, because it's not that hard. People feel like it's going to be really hard.
This is actually super simple. You melt butter and milk in a saucepan on the stove. And I think maybe some water too. And some salt. And then all at once you dump in all the flour and then you just stir it in until it makes a nice thick dough. And you keep stirring and you keep stirring and you keep stirring for a couple minutes until a lot of the liquid evaporates. And then you transfer it to a bowl and you add some eggs and you stir those in. And that's it.
And then you portion it out on a pan.
Like, I didn't, like, you can pipe it and make, like, fancy shapes and stuff. I just took a spoon and I plopped it onto a cookie sheet.
That's all you need to do.
And just use a little bit of water on my fingers to kind of smooth out the edges. But you don't even really need to do that because they're going to puff up all craggy and looking like little rocks anyway.
We're not a fancy bakery. We don't need to pipe things.
Yeah. they're actually really simple, and the cream is really not that hard either. It's just
you don't
milk
even
and
pipe
eggs.
That. You just cut them.
I just cut them open with a knife
and spoon some inside
and spoon some cream inside and just handed them out. Here you go, and they're good. Everyone likes them.
They're good. Yeah. Yes, really good. So. Also on Thursday, we had rosary with many Catholics around the world. We're praying the rosary with Pope Francis. So I got to point out, Jimmy, again, pointed out to me, Pope Francis didn't actually call for a worldwide rosary, technically. What happened was, the Italian bishops asked Pope Francis if he could call for a rosary of Italians for Italy at this particular time, 9 o'clock Rome time.
Isn't St. Joseph the patron saint of Italy?
Because it's St. Joseph's Day. Yes.
Right.
And so that's what they were doing. And a bunch of other Catholics kind of jumped on the bat, which is fine. That's great. Pray in unity with the Pope and all the Italian Catholics. But what happened was some, I think a little irresponsible Catholic news agencies said without evidence that Pope Francis called for a worldwide rosary. He didn't. just to be accurate.
That seems like, does it really matter that much?
A little bit. Because when he does call for a thing, you want it, people to be paying attention. Anyway, right. So we joined in, which was nice. So the Luminous Mysteries, we don't often do family rosary.
I have to say, it's not it might one have been of those
the first.
Things.
Yeah, it might have been the first time we did a family rosary.
I've done some rosaries with the kids, like just me and the kids without you.
Oh, okay. All right.
But not very many.
They did very well with it. They really wanted to keep track. They had their rosary beads in hand. They wanted to make sure they were on the right bead.
Ironically, though, that was the day that Isabella had decided to make her third dinner for
her scouting merit badge.
Her merit badge. So we were actually in the kitchen cooking tacos, browning ground beef at the time the rosary started. And so Isabella and I, she kind of wandered in and out of the kitchen, but I was pretty much in the kitchen with my rosary beads in one hand and a spoon in the other, stirring ground beef.
Yes. And
it's a Catholic mom thing, I guess.
That's right. You can bring the rosary while making your tacos.
You can pray and make tacos at the same time.
Yeah. So that was, I think that went really well, actually. I think they were attentive. They were, they wanted to say the prayers, the right prayers. I think that was good. And now, as Ben said, I don't know if I want to do that every day, but I'd like to do that again. So,
yeah, the rosary is not the devotion I am most called to.
Yeah.
It's good.
Yeah.
It's just, I'm not a daily rosary prayer.
You have divine office. That's your devotion.
I pray the liturgy of the hours.
Yeah. Everyone's got their particular devotion. That's good. So then on Friday, you ventured out to the grocery store for the first time since the lockdown.
Since the previous Friday. Yeah.
Yes. How was that?
It was interesting. I wasn't sure what, when I left the house, I had no idea what to expect. Were the shelves going to be full? Were they going to be bare? Was the store going to be empty? Was it going to be crowded?
And because you couldn't take kids with you, kids were not allowed, you had to do this yourself.
Yes. Although I did see, actually, a handful of kids. I'm assuming parents who didn't have any choice but to bring their kids shopping.
Because there was no one to stay home with them.
But yeah, there was a mom of with a little three-year-old, and there was a kid who looked about maybe 7 or 8 riding around in a shopping cart. And so, but it was for the most part.
But you wouldn't have been able to take them and have them run around the store collecting different things like you normally do.
Anyway. Yeah. So the parking lot, actually, when I pulled in was crowded. It looked packed. And the grocery store there were quite a few people there. And the shelves were well stocked for the most part. Plenty of produce. There were definite areas where there was nothing on the shelf. The oats had not been restocked. There was no oatmeal at all.
Like weird gaps.
No mac and cheese, no baked beans, no pasta.
That I get. I get those. Those right. are sort of lockdown foods.
No frozen vegetables.
Mm.
And no butter, although there was plenty of all the other dairy products, but no butter at all.
Hmm. Weird.
And then the meat department was the weird, it's kind of surreal. There was a case with corned beef because evidently everybody had already bought plenty of corned beef and did not want more.
Right.
There was a small section of the meat. Most of the meat cases were empty. There was a pile of pork, mostly bone-in pork chops and a few pork ribs. There were a few pot roasts. There were a few steaks, and there were some of the weird things
beef tongue,
that sort of thing. I'm not sure if it was specifically beef tongue, but the hocks and the organs and the
unusual,
the stuff that most people don't want,
the stuff that's actually called accurately called offal.
Anyway, so yeah, I sort of bought one of everything. I got a couple more corned beef briskets. I got a pot roast. I got a couple steaks. I got a package of pork chops. I figured that should last us for a week.
Yeah. Yeah, with some creative cooking otherwise, because you made stuffed shells tonight, that sort of stuff.
Right.
So, yeah. So some creative meals get us by.
Plus what's in the freezer and the pantry. Right.
The paper goods you said and cleaning goods were wiped out still.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Those are still wiped out.
No hand soaps.
Yeah. By the end of the week, I realized I had not been out all week. Like, I'd been you know, and out at the front door, taking the trash out, you know, that sort of stuff. But I had not like gone anywhere.
Left the house.
Like, yeah, like left the house in a week, which just, ugh. So on Saturday, after I was done recording some podcasts with Jimmy, I went up to the pharmacy. I went up to the Walgreens,
right,
to get milk, which we needed. But I mean, I really, and then we went for a nice walk the Saturday afternoon, which was really nice to be able to get out. The weather was a little nicer. But yeah, I mean, we've really otherwise just been like everybody else, cooped up. So we've been touching on foods that we've been cooking. We should probably mention some of the other things we made. So last week, we had made Italian sausages before that. Not on the grill, unfortunately. I did grill the steaks the other day, which came out really, really well. But last week, we had leftover Italian sausages. And it's really hard to figure out. Like, what do you do with leftover Italian sausages except reheat them and put them in a bun and eat them or something, you know?
The kids frequently eat them for lunch.
Yeah, they just eat them up. But we had these sausages, and so we decided to make Italian sausage soup.
Right.
And it came out really well.
It was not bad.
Do you remember what it was in it? It was
just like onions, carrots, celery, canned tomatoes. I think I threw in like a can of red beans, and I pulled out some soup separate and then threw in some orzo, because Lucy can't eat the orzo.
But you put the orzo pasta in.
Yeah. I think I threw in some potatoes too.
Right.
Yeah, it was just sort of a vegetable soup with some Italian sausage. I cut the Italian sausage into quarters lengthwise and then sliced them, so it was like little chunks.
The seasoning of the sausage really lends the flavor to the soup, which is good. Yeah, that was a nice, easy soup just for for some leftovers and things. So that was good. Of course, we had the corned beef. We mentioned that. Then we were wondering what to make. What was it? What, chicken breast?
We had some chicken breast in the freezer, and I just was not feeling inspired. So I sort of said, help.
I might have mentioned this on this podcast. I might have mentioned another podcast that America's Test Kitchen has had this article on their website. So America's Test Kitchen is the PBS TV series. So they had this section of their website of all ideas, you know, things to do in the lockdown or whatever. But they had some like a recipe ideas for chicken breast, like easy recipes. And one of them was chicken fricassee. And we're like, and I suggested it. And you said, sure, let's give it a try. It came out really well.
Yeah, so it was basically a chicken and a sour cream sauce over pasta. It was like a mushrooms, and it was sort of lemony. It was good.
Yeah, it was better than I thought chicken fricassee was. I'm not sure what I was thinking it was. Maybe I was thinking chicken cacciatore, which is a dish I never liked as a kid.
My mom used to make chicken cacciatore.
The problem was it was always like thighs with bone. Or, you know what I mean? Or chicken parts with bone. Mm-hmm. And it was like, but the chicken was so well cooked that it was sort of falling off the bone. They had the chicken and the bones and, you know, all the gristle and fatty skin and stuff like that. Like, if I were to make chicken cacciatore now, I would change a lot of things about it. Mm. I would certainly skin it first.
Right.
You don't want that, because unless the skin is crisp, it's just, yeah. So skin it, probably maybe debone it too. Or cook it and debone it before putting the meat back in.
Interesting.
But anyway, that's another dish we haven't made, but maybe we'll make in the future. So that's what we've been eating. So we'll see how we're nothing too crazy yet. We're not like crazy eating out of our, you know, 3-year supply of dry beans yet.
Yeah. So we'll see. I didn't anticipate that actually happening.
Yes, I'm hoping that doesn't have to happen. So let's talk about what we've been reading and watching. I want to mention a book I just finished called, it's based on the new series, Star Trek Picard. It's a prequel called Last Best Hope, and it sets up the events that begin Star Trek Picard. Now, in case you haven't watched it or didn't know.
Which I haven't.
Which you haven't. So the series starts in real time 35 years after the end of Star Trek The Next Generation, which it's been. And it's 14 years after the events of that we saw in the J.J. Abrams reboot, the 2009 movie, where an event happens with the Romulan star that causes a branch off of time, and Spock goes back in time, and now Kirk is not William Shatner, it's Chris Pine, and you know that whole thing, right?
I sort of vaguely remember that. I know I saw it. I couldn't tell you anything about it other
in
than
this,
the fact that I saw it.
Yeah, Picard had 14 years ago had to this whole thing about the Romulan star came up, and the star was going to go supernova, and he, you know, kind of pushed Starfleet to mobilize this most amazing rescue mission in all of history, galactic history. They had to move.
So wait, are we in the reboot universe or are we in the
original
non-
universe?
So this is not the same timeline as the reboot.
No, okay. That branched off.
I'm confused.
Yes, sorry, I shouldn't have confused you. So anyway, just ignore the reboot part.
Okay.
So they have to move 800 million people, 900 million people off of all these planets to save them from this supernova. Now, there's some science problems here. Like, a supernova does not travel through space where it can knock out multiple planets, like multiple habited solar systems. It just, you know, go with it.
Okay.
Okay. But one of the things that I found interesting about it was, is they had, you know, all of these refugees, these Romulan refugees, and there's lots of talk about people having to leave their homes and the trauma that they're undergoing. And I'm thinking, wow, this is kind of appropriate for what we're dealing with now. And at one point, they have these Romulans on board one of these Starfleet ships, and some of them are musicians, and they composed a symphony of some sort, or a concerto, using some Earth inspiration. And they use the prayer from the end of the rosary, the O most gracious Virgin Mary, never let it be known that anyone who fled.
Remember, O most gracious Virgin Mary,
right.
The memorare.
Of course, the version of the memorare they use takes out all the Jesus and Mary bits and leaves in, you know, that we receive peace and mercy, but nothing personal Christian stuff.
So who are they remembering?
We receive peace and mercy, that we will receive peace and mercy. Well, somebody will give us peace and mercy. Maybe the universe will. But I have to look up the exact. I should have looked up the exact way that they phrased it. But it was interesting that they picked. The author had them pick this bit of verse out as something that they latched onto in their suffering. So it's an interesting prequel. It's well written. And it's interesting to read it now, given the worldwide circumstances we're going through. It's not exactly the same thing, but it sort of has a resonance, shall we say. So that's a book I've just finished called Picard, Last Best Hope. And then I've been watching a lot of YouTube channels. You can only watch so much streaming TV. There's a lot of really good YouTube content out there. And this one channel is by this guy named Adam. I don't know how to pronounce his last name. I think it's Liaw, L-I-A-W, Liaw, something. He's Australian. He's an Australian chef. I think he's either Chinese or Japanese, or maybe he's both. But he teaches the Chinese and Japanese recipes, and he'll do series. Like, he did this whole series of videos on ramen, another one on tonkatsu, he's just got this gentle way about him. He's really good at it. He's really great recipes. I mean, really great teaching. You can really follow it. He did one of the okonomiyaki recipes,
right,
that
right.
we looked
I remember
at.
That.
Yeah, so that's recommend that. It's a really nice channel. Yeah, very professional too. So you wanted to talk about something that you're reading with the kids,
right? Because I'm still plugging away at this time. This is the same books for myself, but I thought I'd talk about what I was reading with the kids. It's decided that we just finished up Tom Sawyer, and for Lent, I thought we should read something maybe with a little bit more catechetical bent.
Okay.
Shall we say? So I picked one of my favorite books, which is St. Patrick's Summer by Marigold Hunt. And this is a not nearly well known enough novel. It's for sort of middle grade kids. It was originally, although I think it would work for elementary school kids too, it was originally written in the 1950s, I want to say, at a time when most kids made their first communion a little bit later than they do these days.
Yeah.
And the protagonists of the novel are actually a little bit older even than the kids who are usually making their first communion at that time. The story kind of sounds like it could be really bad, because it sounds like it could be a really didactic, boring story. It's about two kids who are older, who are being sort of homeschooled. They're being tutored by a sweet little Irish woman who lives in their community. They're in rural England. They're preparing for their first communion, and their poor teacher, Mrs. Murphy, is just a little bit overwhelmed at all the questions they keep throwing at her about the catechism. She doesn't know what to do. And so she sort of prays for help. And surprisingly, she gets help, although she never finds out about it, actually. But St. Patrick appears to the kids and says, I want to explain to you about the Trinity, because the whole shamrock thing, it's not really right. I just want to clarify this a little bit.
That reminds me of that Lutheran satire video.
Yes.
Oh, Patrick. No, it's not.
That's modalism,
that's
Patrick.
Modalism, Patrick.
In any case, I love this book. I just can't explain to you how much I love this book. It's an engaging story. You really come to care about the characters, Michael and Cecilia, and their life. And not only do they meet St. Patrick, they also meet Abraham, and they meet Eve, and they meet St. Cecilia. And then they meet an English priest of the Elizabethan era, a recusant priest who's saying masses in secret. So they have these sort of visitations from these characters. And then the saints not only visit them and teach them little bits about the Bible and the catechism, but then also give them little, like, sort of historic flashbacks. Like, they get to see, although not participate in, historic events. So St. Patrick takes them back to the moment when he grabbed the shamrock up and was explaining, using it to explain the Trinity under fire on at the Easter Vigil, when the pagans come to shut him down. And it's really, the theological lessons are really well done. Like, if you want to understand fine points of Catholic theology, it's a really good book. Like, the explanations are lucid, they're clear, they're fascinating. I've even seen people using this book as a college, as a textbook for college classes. Like, it's really that good in terms of explaining the theology well. I feel like it's really helped me to understand some of the, you know, stickier points. But it's engaging. Like, when St. Patrick or Abraham is, or Eve are telling the kids, you know, teaching them, it's not a dry, boring lecture. It really engages them. And then each chapter, like, when St. Patrick appears again, he's like, well, I want to make sure you guys were listening last time. I'm not going to teach you anything unless you can tell me what you listened to. And so then the kids repeat back, which is great because there's this repetition built into it.
Right. There's a review. Yeah.
A review. But it's a story that the kids want to listen to. Like, they all beg, can we please read St. Patrick's Summer? We haven't read it in a couple of days. We're missing it. How often do you find a catechism book that kids beg you to read?
So is this easily available?
Yeah, it's available on Amazon.
Oh, okay, good. It's not one of those out of print books.
Fortunately, it's been reprinted. I think it's by Bethlehem Books is reprinting it. It might be Ignatius. I think it's Bethlehem.
Cool.
Yeah, check it out. It's really great, not only for homeschoolers, but anybody should read this with their kids. It's
awesome.
It's cool.
So one of the things we wanted to talk about was, you know, with all of this social distancing and lockdown and quarantine or whatever you want to call it these days.
I like quarantine.
Quarantine, yes.
Because quarantine originally meant 40 days from Quaranta.
Oh, yes.
So,
so Lent is
40
a kind
days
of quarantine.
Of Lent. Lent is itself a kind of 40 days period. So I think that it's my preferred term anyway.
Okay, there you go. Hopefully it'll be just 40 days of quarantine.
We can hope.
So one of the things we were talking about, you and I, before, was the positive things that could happen as a result of this quarantine. Like, for instance, the church embracing technology of, like, I've never seen so many priests live streaming mass, so many parishes that now stream their mass to their congregation.
And you kind of hope that maybe, even after the crisis is over, maybe they'll continue to do that for homebound parishioners, for sick people, that this is something that now that they've figured out that they actually can do it, they will continue to do it.
Right. This is something, improving their websites, improving their email newsletter. I've seen priests taking advantage to, like, priests who no longer have meetings 4 or 5 nights a week, which I know too many priests have. My friend Father Corey, who does the podcast with us, Secrets of Doctor Who, Secrets of Star Trek, he's been doing a daily catechesis on the Liturgy of the Hours.
Oh, wow. I should check that out.
Yeah.
That's cool.
Yeah. I mean, great creative ways of priests who are saying the rosary with their parishioners, who it puts them in their people's homes. I mean, what a great thing that is.
That is actually really positive.
Right. And so I wanted to, we think of some other positives, not just from a church level.
I want to say, speaking of things that priests are doing, I've seen several different priests in various places who are offering confessions in the parking lot.
The drive-through.
So I saw on Facebook, somebody reshared a thing from a priest who said, jokingly, he felt like he should be asking people if they have fries with that.
Yeah, I was telling you that at dinner. Yeah.
But also, he said that a guy came to confession who said he had not been to confession in more than 20 years. And he was curious when he heard that the priest was offering confessions in the parking lot, and he came to check it out. Now, that is amazing.
That is fruit.
He'd been away from the sacrament for more than 20 years, and here he is making his confession. That's beautiful.
That is good fruit that God is bringing forth from the evil that is this virus.
Because we know that there is no evil that God can't bring good out of.
Good, right. God will not allow evil to happen unless greater good can result. And so some of these things that we're talking about are not just religious things, not just faith-based things, but even just societal things. Like, for example, one of the things we talked about was everybody is now working from home. Who can possibly work from home now? I mean, this is, some people can't, you can't be a truck driver from home. You have to be in the truck, and nurses and doctors, thank God.
And service professionals.
Right, people in the retail stores.
Thank God for them.
But everyone who can work from home is working from home. And my hope is, it sort of depends on how long this goes on. And of course, I don't want to go on too long because bars and restaurants and those guys are all suffering. But if it goes on long enough, maybe will realize as a society that this is something we can do, that it's okay for people to work from home, that it's maybe even better if people work from home.
Maybe some employers who have been resisting steadfastly allowing their employees to have the freedom to work from home because they were afraid that people wouldn't actually get work done, maybe they'll see that, hey, people actually did get work done. Maybe next time Joe is sick, we can let Joe work from home instead of making him come to the office.
Or, if Joe's sick, Joe should take a sick day. But you know,
well,
what?
I
know
some what places yeah, Joe doesn't get to take a sick day, though.
But maybe places are more productive now that they don't have all of this, the meetings and all this other stuff. And maybe now they figure out, we can actually communicate via email and Slack and Zoom and all these other ways. We don't need to be in the same office. I know some people really, especially those extroverts, which we don't understand a whole lot of, but they're out there, who are missing the personal connection. I get that. We extroverts, this is hard for you this time. I know.
Yeah, it is.
But, I think not everybody, maybe we shouldn't have everybody continue to work from home, but there should be
more flexibility.
Right. Hopefully after this, there'll be many more people work from home, which has the added benefit of less cars on the road, fewer need for, fewer trains that we have to be running.
Smaller
mass transit.
Carbon footprint.
Well, in fact, that's what they've been saying is they're seeing the carbon in the atmosphere has been dropping rapidly because people aren't out commuting to work every day. The cities like China, they said, has the pollution over China. The air quality is so much better now. I'm just saying that could be really good. And more people staying at home with their kids, obviously.
Which for some people is very stressful. And they're realizing that, they really prefer working in an office while the kids are at school.
I think it's most stressful for people now because it's unfamiliar. And that's to be a given. On top of which, we're all stressed over this virus and the uncertainty and all that sort of stuff. But also in the beginning, it's going to be stressful as we figure out how this works. Well, maybe after a while, if it goes on long enough, people are going to get used to it. They're going to fall into the new pattern. This will be something that they'll actually enjoy doing and want to be with their kids at home more.
We can hope.
Maybe some parents, some moms or dads will say, I'm going to quit my job and stay home and take care of the kids or something like that. I mean, that, again, that's a personal family choice, but that would be a good thing for some folks. That certainly would be a nice thing for many folks. and for kids. More people may decide, you know, once school is back in session, whenever that will be. I know some schools are canceling the rest of the year. They're just flat out.
Right, I've seen that.
We're not coming back. And who knows how long this is going to go on. There may not be a beginning to the next school year. When this is all over.
Let's hope it doesn't go on that long.
Right. I'm crossing my fingers. But when this is all over, there may be some people go, you know what? You know, not everyone, but a lot of people go, this homeschooling thing, I kind of like it.
I could see. I mean, I wouldn't expect it to be the majority of people, but I could see some people who have been on the line thinking, I kind of like the idea of homeschooling, but I'm not sure I could hack it. I don't think that I can do that. I could see that maybe after, you know, giving a little try, maybe they'll say, this isn't so bad. Maybe I could do it.
And maybe we'll one of the positives is you were not getting the standardized testing and all these other, you know, silly government things that get imposed on the schools. And maybe we'll guess people start to see, you know, we don't need all this extra falderall.
Maybe bureaucracy, I think, tends to grind on in its merry way.
I guess so. but so if more people are working from home, fewer people commuting, maybe companies will start to say, you know what? Why do we have these big buildings in the middle of cities that we're full of people when we could just have most of them stay at home? We should get rid of these buildings and be more distributed in a way we work and move out of cities. And, you know, if you work from home primarily, why live? Because this is a question I ask myself. Why live where it's expensive? You know, we live in Boston is a very expensive.
Of course, there are amenities.
Well, there are amenities. It's not
museums.
Well, my family's here. So close to my mom and my dad. Yes. I mean, that's not your. I mean, they're your family by marriage. But so my family's here. But right. There's the museums and the other, you know, and the arts and culture and history and the geography of the place that we love. But for a lot of people, they could move places that are less expensive. I mean, frankly, if we even moved a little bit further away from the city, close enough where you could visit, our cost of living would be a lot less. More and more people could move further away from the cities and there'd be less congestion in the cities. And people could live, some people would like to live out in Iowa and Illinois and, you know, Ohio and places that are distant from the big cities. But they could work there and have their regular jobs. So that's a possibility. And companies could sell off their big real estate and be more distributed. So that was one of the things we were talking about. The other thing I noticed is a lot of these companies that have been pushing these technologies like deliveries and stuff like that, they've had to accelerate stuff. So a lot of these delivery companies are starting to ramp up the technology that they use and do more and more of what they've been like CVS is now they had a service where you could pay a monthly fee and get your prescriptions delivered.
Right.
Well, now they've made that free.
But which is nice.
Which is nice. That was I put in a prescription order yesterday morning and they said, oh, it'll be there by Tuesday. It was there by yesterday afternoon. I mean, I didn't have to go out to CVS. That's always a good thing.
I'm guessing not that many people are using it yet, at least in our town.
Yeah, we'll see how it goes. I mean, and I'm sure that they'll go roll it back once this emergency is over.
I also think it's been interesting to see how many companies are providing services for free now to parents and kids. Some movies are free. Some museum tours are free. Learning online classes and stuff.
Audible has a whole bunch of like stories that you can listen streaming for free.
There's some good content that has suddenly become available, which is kind of nice.
Rosetta Stone, they do the language learning thing. We have a lifetime subscription to French for Rosetta Stone that we got, and they just extended it. Said, well, you can do any language. We've opened up all the entire library to you for under that subscription, which is pretty awesome. The other thing because nobody's going to the theaters, all the theaters are closed. A lot of the big Hollywood studios are now these movies that are supposed to be released this week and last week, and they're putting them direct to streaming.
Yeah, I saw several of my friends were watching Emma online, which was in the theaters.
Yeah, like in stuff that was like there's a new Pixar Onward that's sent directly to now. Some, they're doing different things. Some is like it's $20 to rent,
Yeah, Emma was $20 when I looked at it. And I said, you know, I could wait till that goes to like Prime and I don't have to pay.
There was another movie that went direct to Netflix. It didn't look like one we would want to watch, but it was some romantic comedy thing, something. But it was interesting. So the studios have been really resistant to what has been called day and date, you know, releasing simultaneously in theaters and to streaming because they don't want to cannibalize the theaters. Well, now they have to do it. You know, these movies are going to lose their shirt anyway, so they might as well just get them out there. So very interesting. I'm curious how this affects, after the emergency is over, whether they go back or whether they do some modified form of this. Now, you were telling me that you've been talking to some mom friends who are feeling some relief.
Relief. It's interesting. I kind of quietly, not like saying too much too loud, but in kind of small private groups, I've been seeing some people say, you know, now that I don't have 50 different appointments and meetings and sports and activities and all of this, I can stay home and I don't feel guilty because I'm not like
running around.
Well, because they're not feeling guilty because they're missing out or they're canceling on people. They're not postponing things to just have to be done later. They genuinely have time free that is not being required of them. It's kind of a safety valve. One of my friends actually compared it to a Jubilee year.
Huh.
Going back to the biblical idea that every 7th year was supposed to be a year of, no, every 50th year.
Right.
Was supposed to be a Jubilee year in which you like.
All debts are canceled. Right. That you had a special time when everything was. I'm trying to think of examples. I remember that all debts were canceled was one of them.
Right. Slaves were freed.
Slaves were freed. Yes.
But the idea of like a sort of a time of rest when we really just don't have to run around quite so much for a lot of busy moms who are trying to do multiple jobs, taking care of kids and working and all of the other things they do. It's been kind of a little bit of a vacation. And that's interesting to me. I don't know that we could, you know, deliberately replicate it, but just that sort of feeling of there being not so much pressure.
I've also seen some moms who were in sports crazy households,
mm-hmm.
who themselves are not quite so sports crazy, very quietly saying it's kind of nice not to have the TV blaring baseball and hockey and basketball and college ball and in professional ball and all these things all the time.
Interesting. I've also seen people lamenting like, what the heck do I do with myself without my sports?
There's this great Twitter. I think it was a Twitter feed of this guy like, day three, no sports. I discovered that there's all these people living in my house with me. They seem nice. One of them said she's my wife. So not to say that we want this to happen,
and of course, a lot of people are suffering terribly. A lot of people are scared economically.
People are dying
So we're not saying that this is a good thing, but what we're saying is that there are some silver linings. There are some positive things that we can look to that do give us some hope and some feeling that this is not all doom and gloom, that there are, you know, it's not bad to acknowledge the good along with the bad.
Yeah. I do have to say, in line with our title for this week, it has been the longest week ever. Like, it just, like, has it been only a week since so much of this has started? I mean, we first got the lockdown just over a week ago, like the order from the governor of Massachusetts that we... no gatherings over 25 people. It's just over a week ago. I mean, it's just kind of crazy to think so much has happened in such a short time.
Yeah, it's true.
But and so we probably got a long way to go. This isn't going to be over soon. And it's hard. I mean, it's hard to think of an Easter without going to Mass. And it's hard to think of, you know, a lot of this. So we're going to, you know, we're going to look on the bright side.
Well, my prayer is that we're going to have some sort of miraculous breakthrough with, a vaccine with treatment that's just going to like swoop in and like save us all.
my prayer is that God just wipes it out. Boom. No more. Nobody's sick.
Would be amazing.
Could you imagine with that miracle, the amount of conversions that would happen in the world? That would be amazing. I would love that. But that's God's will. Whatever God's will be done. He's got a plan. I'm sure of it. And two final things. When the first time we go back, we can go to Mass and we can receive the Eucharist again. I will be very emotional. let me tell you. Two, when we can all get together again and we can all be in public places together in large groups, I think we should have the largest national block party, like a crazy American block party, just in every neighborhood, everywhere. And we should all just have a big party. But that's what I think we should look forward to. So, all right, let's wrap things up. I do want to take a moment to thank our patrons who make it possible for us to create Raising the Bets, including Jody S., Sonia C., Stephen Y., Austin K., and Timothy J. Their generous donations at sqpn.com/give make it possible for us to continue Raising the Bets and all the shows at StarQuest. You can join them by visiting sqpn.com/give. So that's it from us. What do you think of what we had to say? We'd love to hear your feedback. You can let us know by commenting at sqpn.com/bets, that's BETTS, or the SQPN Facebook page, facebook.com/StarQuestMedia, or send us an email to bets, BETTS, at sqpn.com. And we'll put relevant links to from our discussion, including the links to the books, in our show notes at sqpn.com. So remember to like Raising the Bets on the StarQuest Facebook page, and to retweet it on Twitter, where we're at SQPN, and share the show with your friends. Let other people know about this if you think they would be interested in it. We'd really greatly appreciate it. Until next time, I'm Dom Bettinelli.
And I'm Melanie Bettinelli.
Thank you for listening to Raising the Bets on StarQuest.